Hi, everybody. This is Phil the Issues Guy from issuesprogram.com and Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Do you like television? Do you like talking about television? Do you have problems and can't sleep at night? If you any of those things are true, come on down and join Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Phil's recap and review, or check out issuesprogram.com to check out our stuff. Basically, what we do is we talk a lot about television, some movies, but mainly television. We do post-episode recaps, live viewings, drunk commentary games, and just general analysis. So if you love television, you don't have a ton of people to talk about television, or you just cannot get enough of some of these awesome shows like Vikings, Better Call Saul, Westworld, Game of Thrones, even The Walking Dead, and some other random shows that just pop up here and there. If you cannot get enough of all those programs and you want to talk about them, jump on over, join in the live motherfucking chat with some of the best people in the world that all share their thoughts real time whenever we go live. So if you subscribe to the YouTube channel, you follow the YouTube channel by clicking that little bell thing, you can find out anytime we go live. You can also check out issuesprogram.com for a backload of all of our stuff and check out our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and lots of other places. Huge thanks to all of you, and hope you check it out and hope you enjoy it. And I'll talk to you guys next time.
Hello, bastards and wenches, and welcome to another episode of our Anime Boston 2017 interview special series. On today's episode, we'll be chatting with voice actress Michelle Ruff. I became a fan of hers thanks to her role as the original waifu in anime Miss Fujiko Mine in Lupin the Third. She is also known for her takes on Rukia in Bleach, Luna in Sailor Moon, Young Satoru in Erased, Yoko in Gurren Lagann, and Yuki Nagato in the Haruhi Suzumiya series. Outside of her work in anime, and you extreme sports nuts might find this one a little bit interesting, she and her husband Eddie Correa founded the LA-based Scuff Marks Skateboarding and Apparel Company. So if you love anime and doing ollies and Christ airs, then this would be right up your alley. For this press interview, B3 was also joined by Wicked Anime, Worcester State University Center for Media, Fandom Post, Anime Herald, and Toonami Faithful. A nice gaggle of press if there ever was one. So let's shift into gear with this Anime Boston 2017 press interview special featuring Michelle Ruff.
Oh, cool. And what organization?
I'm with WSU, the Center for Community and Media.
Oh, okay. Cool. Both of you?
Oh.
No.
We're here now.
You're together. I thought you said, okay.
So, I'm Kestrel Swift.
I'm Wayne Fawn.
Hi.
And we're from the Fandom Post.
The Fandom Post. So, are you guys, you're online? Are you guys online? Are you online too?
Yes.
Okay. Everything's pretty much online nowadays, isn't it?
Mm.
Okay. And then let's go this way. Yeah.
My name is Derek, this is Evan.
I'm Evan Borgo from Boston Bash McGee. Bash is my name, not my reputation. And I'm also the host of No Borders, No Race, J-Pop and Alternative Music Show.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Is that a podcast?
Yep, it's a podcast.
Awesome.
So if you're looking to find new Japanese artists, it's the place to go.
Oh, awesome. That sounds cool.
I'm Andrew Fleming and
Jonathan Fleming.
And you guys are twinsies.
Yes, we are twins. we host the show Wicked Anime.
Oh, cool.
For the Nerdy Show Network.
Nerdy Show Network?
Yep.
What's that?
It's an online podcasting network.
Is that like a Twitch TV kind of thing?
We're actually a podcast community. It's So yeah, all of our audio shows are hosted on the website itself.
Oh, cool.
And we also have our own video program on YouTube that was the original start of Wicked Anime.
Oh, really?
Yep.
I feel like I've heard of you guys before.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know, it sounds familiar.
I'm also a voice on that show, too.
Are you? So you jump ship? You
yeah,
back
a lot
and forth.
Of cross promotion.
Awesome.
Hi there, Seth Byrne, Anime Herald.
Hi, Seth.
Old school, just writing, new pods.
Nice, I love it.
Yeah.
I love it, the old classic style. And I know you.
I just came because I heard good music.
You heard there was going to be free cookies?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
All right.
My first question is, do you think fans of the original Sailor Moon series from the 90s will be accepting of Sailor Moon Crystal?
Well, they have been really, really accepting. It's interesting. We had a panel yesterday, a Sailor Moon panel, with me and Jeremy and Robbie Damon, Sandy Fox, and then the original voice artist from the Sailor Moon, the Tuxedo Mask voice artist from Japan. And we were talking about how interesting it is that the fandom has been so accepting of us. Even the fact that we redubbed the original, because I was really nervous about that. Like, there was that what the moment when they said, oh, yeah, we're doing this Sailor Moon Crystal, and you guys are all going to come on board. Oh, and by the way, we're starting with the original. We're doing it over again. And I was like, what? No, we can't do that. That's not right. But they said, you know, we want to give the new generation of Sailor Moon fans, we want to bring a new generation of Sailor Moon fans, still paying homage to the 90s Sailor Moon, but with a new fandom redubbing the old, will just kind of create this new, you know, new ball, this new crystal heart of love and light. So, yeah, people have been really, really kind. Really kind. Surprisingly so. But that's the, you know, it's the fan base.
How has the world of anime dubbing changed in the years you've been a part of it?
Oh boy, that's a really good question. It's changed a lot. It's changed quite a bit. I mean, I think that the internet, the fact that you can just so easily download content now, I think it's across the board, even with TV and radio and everything, the digital age. Sorry, Paul, I just scratched your microphone. Or CJ, I just called you Paul.
I thought you were still talking to him.
I think that there's so much more content now, so it's great because there's such an influx of new talent and so many shows from different studios that everybody works. You know, we all have an opportunity to work. I always say there's plenty to go around. But I also think that now anime is so much more mainstream. Like, when I started dubbing, you know, 15 years ago, 17 years ago, it was, you know, it's all about Japanese culture, which it still is. But now it just seems like, I don't know if it's a wider audience now, you know, just because of the internet, and that it's brought, you know, it's just so much more front and center. I think it's just kind of become a part of our culture. You know, a subculture of American pop culture, which is cool. You know, whoever thought?
How do you prepare for a new role when you're given a new character that you've never performed before? What is your process for learning the new character?
Well, it depends on, like, if I have an audition for the character. If I audition for the character, sometimes I'll have a base. If I book the character, then I can go in and I have a basis for where that character kind of lives. Although sometimes what happens, well, probably 50% of the time what happens is I'll do an audition and book a character, get to the studio, and the producer and director will say, we loved your audition, but we're not going to go that route with the character. We'd like to take it this way. So sometimes I think it's like a producer will request an audition from an actor, but they already maybe have a feeling that they want to cast this person. You know, and if it's somebody that I've worked with a lot, like Aniplex, I do a lot of stuff with them. And Hideaway Tsukamoto, she's their main producer. We've been working together for since I started dubbing Lupin the Third, like way, way back. She was with Jenny on. So she knows what I can do. She knows my work. So you know, they might say, well, we're, you know, we love your voice for this, but we're going to do this instead. So preparing for a character in that sense is a little bit difficult because, I don't know, I've just learned from over the years that preparing for a character is good, but getting stuck in choices that I've made for a character are not good. Because you have to, once you get into the booth, you have to be flexible enough to take direction from your team, you know? So that's really, like, I think for any actor, I think that's the most important thing. Because if you get stuck somewhere, you know, you're really not open to, I don't know, to kind of going, ebbing and flowing with the way the show is. It's like it's almost a selfish thing to get stuck in a choice that you've made. It's like, I'm sorry, let your ego go, you know, don't be so focused on what you think is perfect for this character and take the direction. And then also, if I feel strongly about a certain trait that a character might have, I'll say, you know, I really feel like this character should have this, or, you know, they should be this way. And even in the dialogue, like, there might be a way that the script is written that doesn't suit the character. And I'll say, you know, I don't think that she would say this. Can we change it to this, you know? So that's, I guess the answer to your question is I don't really prepare too much. You know, I prepare as much as I can, and then I let it go, you know.
One of our favorite series of last year had to have been Erased, which I have to say, like, no drama compared to that show.
Thank you.
Even regular television.
I know.
Like, if it could have been nominated for an Emmy, it would have, like, won.
It was amazing, wasn't it?
It was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And can you talk about the process of playing young Satoru, who is literally, you know, the 10-year-old with the 28-year-old's mind?
Yeah, that was probably, well, first of all, I have to say that Erased, in my whole career, in my whole acting career, mm-hmm. that show is probably my most favorite. Mm-hmm. I will say that first and foremost. That character, preparing for young Satoru, you know, I went in, and again, it's an Aniplex show. They always bring amazing content. And Alex Von David is the director. He's kind of been with Aniplex now for a while, but, and the reason he always gets hired for them is because he is impeccable. Like, he will beat me to death over a read, you know, and we won't argue, but we'll debate about something in the booth. But I mean, we've worked together for so long now, we kind of trust each other. So, you know, if he has a suggestion or I have a suggestion, we just sort of work together with the character. But honestly, I went in the first day, I auditioned. But the same kind of thing. It was like, I auditioned. My audition was nothing like what we ended up doing. But Hidaway was there. Alex was there. We worked together. You know, Alex asked me to watch the first 4 episodes before I recorded, which I never do. By the way, I never ever watch beforehand because it'll usually throw me off a little just because of what I talked about earlier,
right.
With making choices. But in this particular instance, it was necessary just because of the back and forth between older Satoru and young Satoru. It was necessary to see how things were flowing. You know, how things all kind of flowed together. And Ben recorded, I got lucky because Ben went in first on the first volume. So, like, the first few episodes, I got to hear him during my performance, so I had something to kind of, you know, help with that flow in and out of the back and forth between the two characters. But nothing could really prepare me for the content of the show. I mean, I don't know about you guys after watching it, but a session of Erased for the day, I would just be wrecked, like emotionally wrecked.
Let me tell you, because the episode where Hinatsuki has her first breakfast, I actually stopped watching Family Guy and the Simpsons afterwards. I gave up watching those shows because of how powerful Erased was.
Wow. Yeah, it was unbelievable. But you shouldn't give up Family Guy. That's a great show. But thank you for asking about that. That's like my baby.
Very powerful show.
Yeah, extremely. And the content of it, like the theme, I think is important. You know, what it's dealing with. I don't want to do a spoiler alert, but I just think it's you know, the content was very... it's just something everyone should see.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, my first introduction or moving into the new world of discovering anime, one of that was Bleach, and hearing your role as Rukia, which is one of my favorites.
Thank you.
So, what was your introduction into the world of anime, and how did you finally discover, oh, this is anime?
This is anime, yeah. That's a really good question. And I know I've told this story a couple times, you guys may have heard it before, but I moved to LA from Chicago. I was doing improv, Second City, children's theater, and Improv Olympic, long-form improv in Chicago, doing voiceover work and industrial films and stuff, and I followed a boy out to LA, and, you know, I really wasn't thinking about, like, what kind of work I was going to do in LA. I thought it was just going to be commercials and, you know, more industrial stuff. Well, I started then, well, still now too, there's a publication called Backstage West. And in the back of Backstage West is classified ads for acting gigs. And I looked up, I responded to an ad for I can't remember the exact wording of it now, but it just said, like, animated feature, voiceover for animated feature. So I sent my demo tape in, and I got a call from Bang Zoom Entertainment. And this is when Eric Sherman and his wife Kayeko were first starting their business, Bang Zoom. They were operating out of their house. So I went to their house, and it was funny, Eric and I were laughing about it. Like, last year, he was like, do you remember that? You came to our house, and we were all, like, trying to be really, you know, like, professional, but you were, like, sitting on our couch with the dog, and, you know, they had the camera set up on the table, and they were like, okay, just read. Like, I still hadn't seen, I didn't quite understand that, you know, the script in front of me was going to be, you know, on already animated, and I was going to have to fill in the mouth movement. So I auditioned for this character in Ninja Cadets, and I booked it, and I can't remember her name, but I only had like 18 lines, I think. It was a really small part, but it was my first anime, and it was their first anime. So we both, like, we were like, aw, we've grown up together. Oh, my God. Now they're, like, huge. They have, like, 3 studios, and they're, like, you know, really an amazing company. But that was my very first anime. So I get to the studio, and I'm like, what is this? Oh, my gosh. So, you know, different skill set. Yeah.
The guys still miss you. I've been getting texts from them.
Oh, I know. Paul was blowing up the Twitter feed yesterday. Is Jarrell still upset with us?
Yes. But I think he's upset in different reasons than what you're thinking.
Uh-oh.
He wishes he was here a lot.
Oh.
I wanted to ask, since yesterday was the 10-year anniversary of Gurren Lagann, and
yes, it was
still considered by many as the best mech series. And I'm curious how you feel that not only that people still call it that, but that show still seems to resonate with a ton of anime fans, especially the Optimum.
It's crazy. I know. I think that they, you know, since they aired it last year, didn't Gurren Lagann air?
I think it was maybe like two, but yeah.
Oh, 2 years ago. Yeah. I mean, originally it aired on Sci-Fi. It aired on Sci-Fi Network, which I thought was super cool. And then I think the revival of it 2 years ago was really smart for the company to do that, because obviously with the 10-year mark coming up, you know, I just feel like it's, when you've got a classic show like that, it's really kind of timeless. You know, I don't think, like the shows that I work on now, I don't think I've had a show since Gurren Lagann that's reminded me of that, you know, with like, the whole like theme with the, you know, Sinan and Kamina and Yoko and their interaction with each other and the buddy, you know, the whole buddy thing. I don't know. It's such a great show. I'm honored to play Yoko. I mean, you know, sometimes you get those roles where you're like, wow, how did I get that? What am I doing here? This is crazy.
Well, I mean, it's a popular show, and I'm glad that you at least enjoyed it. A lot of fans love your character.
Thank you.
Especially towards the end, too.
Yeah.
You really get to see her grow.
Yeah. Yep, she does definitely grow. Yeah, at first I was like, oh, I don't know if I like where we're going with her. Mm-hmm. But in the end, it works. Yeah.
I was wondering, do you have advice for college students or other young people looking to pursue a career in the anime industry?
Yes, I do. Let me drink some coffee.
That's step one.
That's step one, yeah. Okay, so here's what I'm going to say about that. And I say the same thing every time. I mean, it might be a little bit different, but I believe, because I know there's a lot of people that want to do voiceover and want to do anime, especially now that it's so popular. There's a lot of new kids coming into the business, which is great. But I always say voiceover work and anime is acting. So first and foremost, you study your craft. If you want to be a voice actor, then you study acting, because it's not about here to here. It's about the whole person. It's about what you bring to the table through your experience in life or non-experience, you know. So I say study your craft, take improv classes, because I swear to you that has saved my ass on more than one occasion. You know, it goes back to the question, how do you prepare for a character? Well, sometimes you can't prepare, and having those improv skills to be yes and to be fast on your feet and make choices very quickly can be really, really helpful when you're in the booth. You know, I say treat it as a business, you know, because as actors, we're in a very vulnerable position, because you're, you know, it's like, oh, here's my craft, here's my talent. But then, you know, you audition and you don't get booked. I mean, there's a lot of... there's a lot of rejection in the field. There's more rejection than there is wins. But the thing is that the audition is the work. Like the way that most people I know who are veterans in the business, when you're auditioning, that's your work. The job, the booking, is the icing on the cake. That's the fun part. So, you know, learn how to audition, learn how to create a really interesting character. Don't be afraid to be vulnerable. Don't be afraid to make interesting choices. And the last thing I always tell people is don't ever, ever let anybody tell you you can't do it. Because I had people do that to me. And I was like, well, screw you. Who are you to say what I'm going to do and not do, you know? And sometimes we get stuck in that, you know, people saying, well, you're not good enough. I had one agent tell me, this is so ridiculous. When I first moved to L.A., I was looking for an agent, and I sent out my demo tape. And there was this one guy from an agency, a big agency, who I called. I had been recommended to him. So he answered the phone. You know, he picked the phone up, and he said, well, you know, I think you're talented, but you have to watch your S's. You're too sibilant. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah. Yeah. And you're too Midwestern. He's like, you have too much of an accent. You have to, you know, be more more LA. And I was like, okay. Which is so not the case. Like, I don't. Now, that's what people look for. Like, they want to know who you are. They want a part of your, you know, your past and where you grew up. It's just so ridiculous. So, I just always, you know, stay the course. That's what I say.
So, you mentioned never watching an anime before you work on it, but recognizing that shows like Erased and Gurren Lagann were so great. Have there been any that you've worked on and been interested in enough to watch in full afterwards?
Yeah, I watched Sword Art Online after I recorded the, you know, that first arc of season two. Just because, well, I was live tweeting with the fans during the airing, but I really liked the show. I thought it was really, you know, it was fun, and I liked the character arc that Sinan had. So I did watch the whole second season. Yeah. Guilty pleasure.
So,
different order this time.
Sorry. So, what was it like returning to the character of Fujiko Mine and reuniting with most of the cast for the upcoming Italy season of Lupin the Third?
Ah, the blue coat.
The blue coat,
which we're still waiting for. You know, it was fun. Richard Epcar directed it. He and his wife Ellen Stern. And we were Facebooking, and he said, you know, hey, Lupin's coming back. Are you interested? And I was like, sure, yeah. What's going on? And he said, well, you know, we have this new series, the Blue Coat series, and I'm trying to get the whole original cast back together. Because there was a point in between where there was a movie that was done by another company, and they went with a whole new cast. So I was like, okay, yeah, let's do it. So it was fun. I mean, it was kind of rushed. They rushed us a bit, which I was a little upset about, especially since they didn't release it right away. I think we could have taken a little more time with it. But it's always a blast working with Richard. Like, he's so funny. He's like one of the original, after Bang Zoom, Richard Epcar, and there's another guy, Steve Kramer, who like is one of the original anime dudes, and they both like directed. I worked with them a lot when I first started, so Richard kind of helped to hone my skills, you know, with dubbing. So it's always fun to be back in the booth with him. He's a riot. Yeah.
I myself can't wait for the Blue Jacket series to come out. I think it's actually one of the best Lupin things ever done.
It's interesting. It's an interesting plot, you know, a little bit different because we see Lupin. We see them in a different, you know, a different format with the third woman now in the picture. So it's interesting.
Yeah.
I would like to know, if you have one, do you have a favorite anime, not necessarily one that you've been in, a favorite show?
A favorite show? I was always a Speed Racer fan. when I was younger. So, I mean, is it my favorite? I don't know if it was my favorite, but it was definitely in my periphery. It's mm-hmm. been in my periphery for a long time, before, obviously, I even knew what anime was. So, and I actually ended up, when they redid it, I played Speed's mom.
So, it seems like you've done a very good job of maintaining good relationships with the people you worked with throughout in the industry from the very beginning, as a matter of fact. What do you attribute that to? How did you manage to do that?
I mean, it's pretty easy because everyone is so nice. Like I said before, I don't know, did I say that here? I'm losing track of who I said what to. The people that I work with in the voiceover community in LA, from the actor, my fellow actors, to producers, to studio heads, to, you know, directors, are so amazing. Like, we seriously have the best group of people that you could ask for to be surrounded by. So it's really been, it's been easy to do that. And I'm really more about, like, honestly, I don't really think about my work as work per se. I don't know how to, I'm not quite sure how to word it. It's really about my relationships with people. I'm more interested in that, in the formulation of my friendships and the relationships I have with people. And the work always comes out of that, you know, because I'm enjoying what I'm doing so much that I think, you know, that kind of culminates more work. And I try to be really easy to work with. Like, I think in the business, you can't be a diva or an asshole. You can, really, seriously, because word spreads really fast. And if you are, you know, people don't want to work with you. Or if you're, you know, parading through a studio trying to, you know, self-promote every time you walk in, you know, it gets old. So I tend to shy away from that kind of stuff, and I just really concentrate on the, you know, that human connection with people. It's important. I mean, it's an interesting life, but it's super fun. Did I answer? Yeah.
Yes,
okay.
Well,
right.
Another anniversary question for you. Toonami has just reached its 20th anniversary, and I'm curious what goes through your mind thinking, wow, this has been around for that long, and the fact that your voice has been on quite a lot.
I know, I was going to say, wow, 20 years, that's just about how long I've been doing anime. Let's see. Yeah, wow, Toonami. It's crazy. That's crazy. I'm just wondering, like, I'd like to know what shows were airing when they first started.
Oh, that'd be like Voltron, Robotech stuff.
Right? Robotech.
Yeah, pretty much like Thundercats, of course. That's Paul's favorite.
Oh, yeah.
But that's
Speed Racer.
I mean, that's like where it started. It's just all of a sudden you see the progression of shows that have come forth, whether it be anime and even American action as well, like Batman Beyond, Justice League, that kind of stuff.
Right.
It's just really interesting hearing, like, from the voice actors of, like, yeah, you know, I've grown with a lot of the fans, at least, you know, in a weird just, like, kind of relationship, just watching the shows kind of thing and connecting with maybe your characters.
Yeah, it's so crazy to even think about that it's been 20 years. That's, wow. Wow, I feel kind of old.
Oh. That wasn't my intention.
That's not your fault.
How has your experience been at Anime Boston this year?
Oh my god. I was just telling my fiance that this has been like one of the nicest conventions. Well, first of all, I have to give a shout out to Vu, who is my handler, who has been like incredible. And the guest relations gal, Rhea, who set everything up, is just, I mean, they're super organized. And then coming, the fans, like my I flew in on Friday. We got up at like 4 in the morning and flew in, and I had an autograph session that night. And I was exhausted, like so exhausted. But I told the guys, I said, you know, I don't want to, you know, they were like, well, we can limit, you know, autographs. And I said, well, let's open it up because I know a lot of people are coming from other states to see me, so I don't want to not get to them. So by the end of the line, and I'm so glad I did this, Boo, I had like 5 people in a row bring me artwork. Like this beautiful artwork. I was literally like almost in tears because people are just gifting me, you know, these beautiful pieces of some of my characters that I did. And even yesterday, same thing. Somebody drew this really sweet little picture of Luna. And I had a couple of other pictures of Yukari and Rukia and Yoko. And I'm just like, oh my God, what is in the water here? Like, everybody is so talented. I don't know. A lot of like really talented artists in Boston. Yeah, so it's been wonderful. I love it.
I'm glad you're having a good time.
Thanks.
So, another Hoopon series you worked on starred Fumiko.
Yeah.
And that was dubbed by Funimation.
Uh-huh.
So, what was the process like working for a studio outside of LA? How did that differ and anything else like that?
No. That was the only time. So, Chris Sabat directed. It was his studio, Okratron, in Texas. And what we did was he called me and said, hey, I have, you know, the series. You know, we would need you from this time. You know, it needs to be done by this date. He said, we could fly you out for a weekend. Or he said, you know, can we get you out here? We could do, like, a 2 or 3 day stint where you're just in studio, you know, 8 hours each day and we're banging it out. And I was like, well, I could come on the weekend because during the week I couldn't really get away. So I flew out like the beginning of January a couple years ago, and we literally recorded like 32 hours one weekend. And then I had to go back for a second weekend, fly to Texas and record the second weekend. So we got it done in 2 weekends, but it was like 64 hours of recording, like just straight. I know. It was really intense, like super intense. That is the first time I've done that. I can't say I wouldn't do it again, because we had fun, and they were really lovely. Chris is super, super sweet, and his wife. But it was really hardcore.
Also, I just wanted to mention, we were talking about the original Toonami block. Sailor Moon, Voltron, Robotech, Dragon Ball Z, Gundam Wing, G Gundam, Gundam 8th MS Team, and Outlaw Star.
Oh, Gundam 8th MS Team. I was in that.
Yeah.
I believe there were a couple in there I was in.
You're in Sailor Moon now.
Yeah, I was just going to say it's interesting because Sailor Moon came back. Okay, so the original Sailor Moon in the 90s was on Toonami, and now we're redoing it. And what was the other? What was another one?
There's the Tier 4 Gundams. Let's see, Sailor Moon, Voltron, Robotech, Dragon Ball Z.
Dragon Ball Z.
Yep. Gundam Wing, G Gundam, Gundam 8th MS Team, and Outlaw Star.
Yeah, that's wow. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I was in Gundam 8th MS Team. There might have been another one in there too that I was in. But yeah, Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball. I'm in Dragon Ball Super now for the Philippine market. Yeah.
So my question is, what role have you played that you feel is closest to you personally?
That's a good question. Rukia. From Bleach. Yeah. I don't know, like, because we recorded for so long. That's the longest running show I've ever done, 7 years. So, I mean, I think there was just kind of a piece of her and myself that were just kind of, it wasn't ever really a stretch for me to play her. And I feel like there's that, like, Because she was super tough, but then she was super vulnerable, and I think I'm kind of like that too. You know, maybe more tough. I think maybe I'm a little more vulnerable exterior, but tougher on the inside. You know, maybe we're reversed. She's tougher on the outside, more vulnerable on the inside. So, I don't know, I just always felt a real connection with her character. For sure.
So was there a difference in tackling the role of Yuki Nagato in The Disappearance of Makoto Yuki-chan compared to when you first played her in the alien form in the original Haruhi series?
Yeah. That was kind of interesting because, well, first of all, Funimation produced that, but it was all the original cast. But it was interesting because, you know, in her human form, like, I was, this is a situation where, you know, where you have a character that you've played, and, you know, Haruhi, we had 2 seasons in a movie, so, I mean, her character is, that's who Yuki is. So having to change her was really upsetting to me, and I was glad that they told me before I went in that there was, you know, going to be some differences in her character. Because I did think about it a little bit, although I didn't, like, practice or, you know, but I did have some ideas about what I wanted to do to make her sound a little bit different, but still be our Yuki-chan. You know, because I didn't want to stray too far from this beloved character that I think, for me, I was so attached to, and I know some of the fans were attached to, you know, who she was in the original. So I really approached it with kid gloves. Like, I just was, you know, I was very like, okay, this is the idea that I have for her. This is what I'd like to do. And Todd Habercorn directed, you know, he was with me at first. I had a series of directors. Vic Mignogna directed a few episodes. It was him and Todd, and it worked out like really well. It just, you know, I think what we ended up with really set into the series and into who she is. You know, and over the long haul of the show, you know, we get to see a little bit of a progression in that. Did you like it?
I thought it was a very interesting, like, take on it, because I know it's the whole alternate universe sort of thing. This takes place in, like, the universe that Kyon finds himself in The Disappearance of Haruhi Suzumiya. So
right.
I thought it really unique for them to actually take the character of Yuki and kind of change her from the alien to just your average schoolgirl.
Like how, yeah, what would happen if that were the case? Well, there it is, yes. Right?
Well, what would happen if Haruhi was in a world where there weren't aliens, time travelers, and experts?
Right. Yeah.
So interesting. I liked it.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah. I was, another. That's another, you know, one of those things where you're like, okay, mm-hmm. We're treading on some, you know, some water here. Yeah, we need to be careful because I didn't want to change her too much.
Right. Because, you know, we'll call Boston Bash Brigade because of the SOS Brigade.
Oh, are you really? Oh my God, that's funny. Okay. So, yeah, you definitely had a connection to that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, a lot of your experience has taken place in series and long-running shows. But you also have experience in video games, and it's particularly fighting games like Call of BlazBlue and Sea Viper and Street Fighter.
Uh-huh.
So what were the experiences working in short length with voices from video games and long length in TV series?
Well, it's interesting because Sea Viper and Carl Clover, is that who you're talking
Carl,
about?
Yes.
Carl? Those two characters, when it's interesting for RPG games and like, you know, Carl, like the one that Carl is in, it's more, you get more of the story, like there's a little bit more of a backstory. There's different levels of fighting games, which I'm sure you guys know. Like I just did and I could talk about it because we didn't. There's no NDA. I just did a video game called Lawbreakers, where I play a female medic, Toki, and that really is like the difference between that kind of a video game and, let's say, the Karl Clover video game is like this. You know, because you've got the Lawbreakers thing where it's really, you know, first person shooter, and it's all about, you know, that you have like this much time to fit that character into that line and bring it to life as a playable, fun character for you guys to play. And to keep it moving quickly. Like, I think with a character like Carl, and even Sea Viper kind of falls in the middle of the two, I think. But on this end, you've got the story. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got backstory on why Carl has, you know, his big sister on his back, and like why that. I mean, it's so bizarre. Like, that whole thing is very, very bizarre. But there's that backstory. You know, and the in-between with an RPG, I think you get more of a backstory than you do with that first-person shooter game. So, you know, it just depends. Now, when I go into studio to do a video game, I'll usually ask. I'm like, okay, what's the format of the game? Because that really will drive the choices that you make for a character. So... yeah.
All right, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. So let's give Michelle Rupp a round of applause.
Has it been an hour already? That went by so fast.
Yes, it did.
Good questions, you guys.
Thank you very
and
much.
Gals. Yeah, really good questions.
Thank you for still coming even after with the injury.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So all the cosplayers and probably someone that can hook up a little motor to that, too.
I have one at home. A little scooter I get around the house in, and I told my fiance, I said, I need like a soundtrack to like record a soundtrack for me, you know.
Perfect.